Today on the Tech for Business podcast, Kelsey and Todd get together to discuss the CrowdStrike outage, offering insights on resilience and adaptive strategies for your business.
Today, we're sitting down. I am Kelsey, a member of our marketing team, moderating with Todd, our COO and CISO here at CIT. And obviously, Friday, we had just a little bit of an outage happen globally. I saw a number this morning, according to Microsoft, it was 8.5 million computers that were affected by the outage. And my favorite social media comparison, because yes, that's where I get most of my news, was it was like Y2K, but we just weren't prepared for it. And I was like, hey, that's kind of my favorite. What's going on? But I wanted to hear from you, Todd, hopefully non-technically, as non-technical as we can get this morning. What exactly happened on Friday?
Sure. So I will not get technical on it, but essentially what ended up happening with the CrowdStrike update is what the problem really was is, I guess I'll back up a little bit just to give a little more context on it. CrowdStrike, in case anybody doesn't know, it's referred to as an endpoint detection and response tool set. Back in the good old days, way before the graybeards were gray, that used to be similar to an antivirus tool set. The way that the tool is designed from a security perspective is what it's trying to do is it's always trying to stay up to date with the latest and greatest mitigations for security threats. As such, what ends up happening in today's modern world, there is a process that's designed to make sure that you have multiple updates happening very, very rapidly in software development. So as a security tool set trying to keep up with those types of things, you see updates pretty regularly. What happened in this particular instance is one of the updates was, we'll refer to it as faulty. What should typically happen is there is usually a quality assurance aspect where you go through and test this very, very heavily, which I would say, if anybody doesn't know, this impacted only Microsoft Windows devices, and it did not impact any of the Mac devices or in Linux. And so I would say that that QA process did work in both of those instances, but there was a major failure in the deployment of the update for the Office, or I'm sorry, for the Microsoft Windows environment. So on a broad scale, what it was an update that was supposed to mitigate security risks, but unfortunately caused computers when they rebooted to go to what we refer to in the IT world as the blue screen of death, or the big blue frowny face thing that most people have probably experienced once in their lifetime.
Or as tech acronyms tell us, the BSOD. I know I saw that floating around social media and I was like, what does that mean? Somebody was like blue screen of death. And I was like, oh, got it. With having that be an update, just one clarification, right? Most updates we see on our computers personally, not at work, it'll go, hey, you have an update. Do you want to update? And if you're like me, you'll go, no later. And then my inner Todd goes, but it's a security risk not to update. And I'm like, How did this affect so many devices? Was it an update that was pushed out automatically? Is that probably what happened in this instance?
Yeah, that's exactly what happened is, as part of most best practice recommendations, doing auto updates makes the most sense. Because as you said, when you have the human element in it, a lot of times people will postpone it because it's impactful for their day. They're on their computer because they're using it, not because they want to wait for a 10-minute restart. I think there was a TV show recently that had something like that where they were going out into space. I forget the name of it. Space Force, maybe something like that.
Oh yeah. It was some comedy. Yes.
Yes. Same thing. And you're trying to reboot the computer in the middle of the mission and that's no good. So what ended up happening in this particular instance was a lot of people had the automatic updates in place. And then of course it had a major impact. In case anybody really has been paying a whole lot of attention to it, there's still a fairly large number of people that are impacted it, and we're, 4 days later? So yeah. There were still flights being canceled and several delayed, and it's still significant.
And I know we won't go into the technical of, like, how do you roll it back and all of those things, because that's another podcast that we could spend a very long time on. So if anybody's listening and they're like, I want that podcast, let us know. We can certainly sit down and talk a bunch more about that. But kind of going, okay, that's what it was. That's who it affected. It's still affecting people. What can somebody, specifically a business leader, learn from an event like this, right? You kind of go through, you do all the things, you struggle bus it, you say, we got to get it back up. What's the main takeaway? What's kind of like the next thing that you should do once you're back to operational?
Yeah. That's a great question. I think there's a lot. I will back up and say, I know you said this isn't that particular podcast, but if it was me and I was listening, I want to know why. Why is this still a problem 4 days later? And the answer is when you got the blue screen of death, even if it wasn't you, you being anybody who had to experience it, what ended up happening is you have to manually be in front of the computer. There is no way to remotely resolve it. You can't just go in and scoop out the update and make it work. Somebody has to physically be in front of it. And if you're a large organization, which the people that are still heavily affected on it, there are so many people that can get around and do those manual changes and fixes. So big impact, massive manual effort to go in and remediate the problem. So I'll move on from that without getting any more technical. Going forward, I should say, is one of the things that I think is kind of an interesting takeaway is there's a lot of different things. One, obviously, the vendor needs to do a little bit better of a job. However, I think what you're really seeing is when you get to a situation where you've got a very heavy dependence on any single point of failure, you're going to have to take a little bit deeper dive onto this. One of the minor things that I'll kind of tangent off on real briefly here is the impact of this was kind of seen slightly ahead of the actual event in some cases. So Microsoft, some of their tools, like on their Xboxes, I know that there was some sign-in issues that was going on very, very early. And the reason why I point this out is because Microsoft owns and sells and uses a lot of their own security stack, but they have clearly gone through a process where they looked at it and said, we have a single point of failure here. We got to make sure that we're not wholly dependent on only our own tools. And so I'm inferring, and I never went back and looked, and I don't know that they've acknowledged it either, but I would assume that they were using CrowdStrike to some of their EDR solutions. And so they had gone through the process and looked at it and say, well, I can't be completely on this one tool. If I do, it takes down everything, and that's a bad place to be. So as you're looking at your systems and doing a review, so in case that wasn't clear, do a review of your systems and start to dig through. What do you have? Is there a single point where you said, if this one thing went down, this would majorly take me offline? You can get a lot deeper into it too. For example, we do what's referred to as a tabletop exercise. Tabletop exercise are, we're going to mimic this is happening in the real world. And so I started writing those Friday morning, oddly enough, of going, hey, before I forget about this, what would happen in a situation very, very similar? It didn't have to be CrowdStrike. It could have been a variety of different tools. But that would be a good place to start, too. In the event we had a single failure, let's say you're in the banking industry and it's your core banking app. Let's say you're in the healthcare and it's your core database that you're using for your patient data. Start going through that. Am I wholly dependent on it? Do I have the right tools, the right processes, et cetera? That would be the number one place I'd start. Part two is if you've got the wherewithal and you've got the ability to do this, a lot of providers like CIT will tend to do a lot of this too, is what's referred to as sandboxing. You'll test the patches out before you deploy them. If you don't have that, a lot of people will do a delay on patches. So let's just say it's Microsoft Patch Tuesday. Some people may delay that a week or 2 weeks before they go ahead and apply the patches. That'll allow it to make sure that you don't have a single point of failure again. You've seen other people that have applied it without having any issues. And then the third one for me in particular would be stagger it. You don't need to patch every device immediately and have them all reboot simultaneously and have hundreds of devices offline simultaneously.
That makes sense. Sitting here as a admitted Mac user, if you couldn't tell, if anybody's watching this video, please listen to it instead of watch. I am wearing my Apple AirPods today, but that was something that was my favorite semi-humorous is all the Mac users watching everybody else on a Friday go, I'm out of office, too bad. And Mac users going, oh man, which I know you mentioned that Mac was not affected. So something like that kind of comes to mind of going, hey, yeah, you have that plan. You know your users that maybe have different device types. Maybe include them in that plan because, right, maybe I could have accessed something that you on your lovely PC could not have accessed. Just a little bit of PC shaming there. Love you all, 100%. So as we go through and go, okay, specific lessons, I know you already kind of talked about, do you have that single point of failure? Which tools matter? When you're picking out a tool, because, right, we've talked about, we have lots of podcasts about how EDR is great and it's one of the core things that you should have. And now we're going, yeah, it's an EDR tool that took down 8.5 million computers. Which sounds like a bad marketing scheme from my perspective, but how do you decide whether or not a tool like that is worth it to your business? How do you weigh that risk?
Yeah, this one's is really tough. I mean, you do tend to look at market leaders and CrowdStrike. There's a few others that are market leaders in the EDR space. So SentinelOne's another one that's out there. And then, of course, I mentioned the Microsoft toolset, which is Defender for Business. Those would be your top three marketing leaders. And we typically go through that process. When we go through the vetting process, we're looking for more than that's super popular. We're trying to say, does it work for our business? What does it look like, et cetera? Very rarely would this be this type of consideration be high on the list. If you're getting into that type of consideration, it's more of a risk conversation and you're getting into the, am I wholly dependent on this? What is our exit strategy if we don't like the tool? That type of thing. It's a bit different conversation. I think the lessons learned are going to be deeply brought into many organizations, you know, so even though I'll use Microsoft because I just mentioned their name, even though it didn't happen to Microsoft specifically, although I think a lot of the news sources were saying this is a Microsoft outage, which is a little bit of incorrect data. They will look at this and say, well, why did that go wrong? How do we keep this from happening in ours? What are the additional automations we can put in, the checks and balances, et cetera? So I think a lot of businesses will learn from this, especially the vendors in particular. But when it comes to actually picking vendors, you should have some sort of vendor due diligence you go through. Ours is rather robust. We look at a lot of tools every day. So ours is very, very deep. We do demos, we do trials, we compare it to others, we do matching up, we make multiple people use the tool set. We've got small subsets where we do a trial basis on them. So we've got our power users, if you will. So we go through a very extensive process to make sure that we're okay with the tool set. If your organization isn't capable of doing that or doesn't have the manpower to do it, find a partner that does would be my answer. And then there are some reputable places out there too. I know a lot of people will gravitate to Gartner, which is fine. I think they're a fine organization, but it is pay to play. So if a vendor is not paying to be considered, they're not. But there's a lot of other tools out there too that will help you go through that process.
Makes sense. So doing your due diligence, but also, right, just as the EDR as a tool set is still something that I'm hearing that you're going, it's still important to have EDR on your devices.
Absolutely critical. Yeah, this was an unfortunate event. There's a lot of bit of debate whether this is a security incident or not. Because it's a security tool, I would say it most likely should have been considered an incident. Absolutely not the B word, which I hate saying, but it was not a breach. It was an incident. They did have an issue. But yes, to me, EDR is still absolutely critical. This would also highlight that leaning on a single security tool as your quote unquote solution is not the answer either. I think this is probably more opinion than fact, but my opinion of what's happening in the world is, unfortunately, security is still considered largely in most industries as I have to do it because, and not because I should. So, I would like to see that the adoption of it is considered holistically and not just, hey, it came up on my insurance requirement for my cybersecurity. So, okay, what tool can I throw in here to check the box? And I'm probably pontificating a little bit, but that's okay.
Todd has never heard this discussion ever before. It's fine. So we've kind of skated around this a little bit, but I know with security in general, and while you just clarified, wasn't necessarily a security outage, but security tool, potato, potato. We say it's not if, it's when, especially, right? Even if you're a small business, I know we talk about that, saying, hey, you're not, just because you're not Target or US Bank or fill in name of Fortune 500 company here, doesn't mean that you're safe. Doesn't mean that you don't have a tool. Is there a chance that something like this could happen again, whether it's malicious or not?
Yeah, I mean, I think anything could happen. I think this particular type of event probably, like I said, will probably kind of, at least in the short term, be less likely to happen because it just did. A lot of people will circle back and go, and what is the lessons learned here and how do we apply this to ourselves? I do want to kind of, again, get on my soapbox briefly as part of the soapbox series, is it is not a matter of if, it is when. I haven't done one of a podcast lately and statistics, but we've been kicking them around recently. And there was an example that was in Nashville somewhat, I don't know, it was a couple months ago, I think. And they were saying roughly around 50% of organizations, regardless of size, had suffered some cybersecurity incident. And so it is very important to consider it. So I know I was just kind of saying, please pay attention, look at it. It's not, you got to do it because insurance making you to do it. You got to do it because you should be doing what'll be called due care. And it's what would a reasonable person do in a similar situation. I'm a big proponent of that. You should be doing the things because it's the right thing to do. And in the situation, you should be doing it, not because somebody's forcing you to do it to check a box so you can get something. Security problems are massive. This is not really a security issue itself. As I said, it was a security tool, so I'll still put it into that bucket. But yeah, it's something like this could happen. This type of thing specifically, probably lower. But the vendor supply chain, I think, is huge. You're starting to see more and more of those types of things come up over the last year and change. It's been pretty high on the list of things that have been going on, if you will.
What, you're saying that we have more and more tools that are all connected across multiple devices remotely?
Yep. Yeah, it's true. I mean, most people probably, this is something that came up on LinkedIn too, and Kelsey shared it with me, but you sometimes forget about how interconnected everything is, and you forget how frequently you just rely on it and expect it to work. So IT does work 99% of the time, but when it doesn't work, people are very high alert, which is probably the reason why we have a podcast specifically about this incident today.
Exactly. And kind of hopefully kind of wrapping it up, not necessarily I was going to say with a nice little bow, and then I was like, I don't think there's a nice bow on any of this. But right, you went through, let's just say hypothetically, your company had all these blue screens of death, you just kind of remediated. I know you talked about tabletop, but are there any like kind of top three that you're like, before you even engage somebody to do it, should you, I don't know, document it but not save it on your computer, as the person who made the reel going, you probably save that on your computer, because that's what I would do. I would type it, save it on my computer, and then put a nice little bow on it, because I don't even own a printer. Are there things like that that you're like, these are kind of quick hit, I would start there and then kind of keep on going?
I'm not sure I quite follow that in regards to what.
So let me rephrase it a little bit. This just happened, right? You went through all the things, you called the people, you had the IT guy come in, fix all the devices, you communicated to your staff, but maybe you're still a young enough organization that you didn't necessarily have a plan for this to happen. Where would you start with making that plan? Does that make a little more sense?
Yeah, I think we've got an incident response plan podcast too, but I would. So I've been in IT for a very long time, and I grew up in organizations where there was heavy structure. And so when I first started, it was ISO was the organization that I started with, where it's all about documenting what you do, how you do, et cetera. And there's a reason for that. It makes things consistent, repeatable versus just going for it. I'm not saying don't go for it, but after you've gone for it, you should go back and document, this is what we did, here's how we did it. You don't want to be, again, this would be a great example of a single point of failure. If you just went for it, there is no additional knowledge that anybody else in the organization has. I certainly understand some people will say something along the lines of, well, that's good job security for me, but it actually is not. The company won't retain you just because you're the only person. But it is better for everybody when it's all formally documented. So in this scenario, an incident response plan that says, what does it look like if we had something like this happen? And then again, the tabletops, in my opinion, are where you practice what you preach, if you will. And you can get into the nuance of, well, we're going to throw a little wrench in here that's slightly different. If you just said the answer to all my questions of what happens when this comes up, what do we do? The answer is I call Kelsey. That's great. And I'll take Kelsey out of the equation and say, okay, if you can't get a hold of her now, what are you going to do? Those are how you document it, you test it, you keep getting better. Those are the things that I would say are key to your success. Wow, I really had a hard time with that.
Yeah, it was great. It's drinking the IT Kool-Aid that I like over, like, and circling it all back to, you should have a plan, Yes. Which my brain, not having to fix any of this again, I didn't experience it. I just got to watch it on social media. But right, going, okay, where do you store that plan? Do you have a plan? And now that you're fixing the plan, maybe now is the perfect time to document what you did. So then, to your point, then you can practice it and poke more holes in it in the future. But while you're having to do it, probably the best time to document exactly what you're doing instead of trying to remember everything that you did. Because if you're like me, you will forget 5 seconds later. But thank you so much for sitting down today, talking over. We covered kind of what happened on Friday, high level. did a very basic skate over of technically how it's rolling back, what's going on with it, that it's at the device workstation level, and then what we can learn from a device like this, that it's probably has a good chance of something happening again, even if it's not to the same scale, to your business, and that you should have a plan, you should practice the plan. And I think that's just about it. Awesome. Well, if anybody listening has any question, wants Todd to get way more technical, we're more than happy to sit down and chat. You can always reach out to us at cit-net.com/podcast or email us at info@cit-net.com. And we'll be back on Wednesday with another episode, since this is the bonus one.